accession number 20472, Reel 2.
Les Tanum Reel 2. Why? So there were no warmer clothes available for you?
No, we was also issued with really industrial gloves. But the fact is that we had to do things that we couldn't use wear gloves at the time. That they really wasn't a lot of help. And there was no warm clothing as far as I can remember. I mean, we used to, under these rubberized boiler suits, I mean, we used to wear whatever warm, our own clothing that we had. So you had a blue woolen jumper, or if you got an old submariner's jumper or something. It was nothing issued as such. It was merely this rubberized boiler suit, as I say, that kept the wind out. It wasn't warm. It wasn't warm clothing, but fur lined or anything like that. It would just really stop the wind penetrating.
How much possibility of injury was there doing your job?
Oh, a lot. Not only for me. The flight deck on an aircraft carrier is one of the most dangerous places in the world. Because if you imagine, you've got a strike, if you've got 15 aircraft, and you're bearing in mind that they are propeller-driven aircraft, not like today's, anybody could slip into an aircraft propeller if they was a handler, an aircraft handler. But in the case of whilst we was in Korea, I mean, aircraft, when they was on the catapult and they go from nothing to 60 knots at the end of a catapult, we've had bombs come off that used to bounce along the deck with the commander air shouting, push it over the side, push it over the side, only to see two stokers running the other way, like. When they landed on, if a rocket hadn't fired or was hung up, we had lots of instances of rockets coming off when they landed. As they hit the deck and bounced, it used to jar the rocket off. And again, we had an instance where it went right down the flight deck. And an aircraft handler saw it coming, and he dived over the side. And he was picked up by the then escorting destroyers. Because again, we didn't have helicopters in those days. Machine guns used to go off, or the cannons used to go off, and in fact we had aircraft handler that was killed through that. As it bounced on the deck, a firefly came in, and one round and its cannon went off. And it was fate. The cannon went up, the round went up, and hit the top wire of the barrier, and deflected down into this aircraft handler who was waiting to bring marshal the aircraft on. So it was a dangerous place on the flight deck. Dangerous. Not just for stokers, for everybody that worked on the flight deck.
Did you feel nervous because of it?
No. No. We was doing the job and that was it. I mean, when you was on the barriers and you if you saw an aircraft that wasn't going to catch one of the 10 wires, or you all of a sudden you saw a rocket come off, we had funk holes, escape holes. We could dive down off of the barrier sponson into the passageways below so we could get out the way. But they was unarmed, those carriers.
Do you remember anybody going into a propeller?
Yes, but that was not in Korea. That was on the cruise prior to Korea, and we took him into Belfast, but that was a no-go. Because the aircraft are sort of interlocked when you imagine you've got to get them all down aft and still leave enough for them to take off. They're all packed tight down aft and the wings are virtually interlocked. You've got to be very, the handlers had to be very, very careful. Very, very careful. And again, when they came into land, we had what they called a DLCO, which is a deck landing officer, who everybody else now knows as a Batman. And he had a screen behind him, so he stood in front of a screen for the pilot to see. And it has been known that one of the pilots misjudged his landing And he took the Batman screen away. The Batman managed to dive. He used to have a net underneath where he stood, a safety net. And he came in at the wrong angle and didn't watch the Batman's signals. And he took the Batman screen away with his wing as he went past. So, but yeah, he used to get all sorts of incidents. All sorts of incidents.
Any other incidents that you recollect off the coast of Korea, please?
Well, we used to... The cap that flew around was really protecting the ship. We had a destroyers around us in the screen. And we had the cap that flew, which was always two aircraft. But we had lots of instances. The North Koreans were presented with two submarines. And although, of course, in hindsight, we know that they never come out, they was always a menace, the fact that we knew they was there. So consequently, the CAP was always on the lookout for periscopes, submarines that might turn out to be whales or something like that. The other thing was, of course, the Koreans were not, North Koreans were not great sailors. They had a small navy, which was... virtually wiped out by HMS Jamaica in the opening days of the war, but they used to come out in sampans. Mining was a very, very big problem. They had acoustic mines, contact mines, and magnetic mines, and they used to come out in sampans and get ahead of the fleet, and they used to drop the mines over the side, hoping that the ship would sail into them. But we used to have destroyers that used to go and board these. And they used to find quite a lot of them, these groups. And when we was in Incheon, we used to go in there for fuel. Never ashore, just for fuel. They used to drop mines over the side there in the harbour in the hopes that you was going to catch something. So mining was a big problem. The submarines, as I say, never did come out. But they was, we wasn't to know that. I mean, we always had to... instances. They used to blow mines up the cap and or get the destroyers for a bit of rifle practice or something like that. So,
if the submarines had come out, do you think they would have got through?
They would have wiped us out. The sea on the west coast of Korea is shallow, and so much so that we used to operate something like between 45 and 60 miles away from the coast. And they stationed, until we moved up Korea, they used to station a destroyer halfway between the two because it was a shallower draft in case any pilots got in trouble. Called bird dog, that's what they used to call it. Typical American thing, it was a bird dog. But Captain Bolt, who was our captain, stated that if a submarine had got out, to see this fleet steaming along at a steady 12 knots, a submarine could have done a hell of a lot of damage. Could have done a hell of a lot of damage. But for some reason, I don't think they're really a maritime nation, the North Koreans. The South Koreans now are. They've got something like 200 ships. I think, in fact, they've got a bigger fleet than we have. But the North Koreans weren't, at that time, a very big navy. They wasn't maritime orientated. They had a small air force and, of course, a large army.
Did you ever get any attacks by enemy aircraft?
Not on the ship. Not on the ship. We eventually got a helicopter from the Americans that was to be used for mine spotting. And when the North Koreans started to advance down, several of the troops got trapped on one of the coastal planes. And the army, or whoever it was, sent an LST, a landing ship tank, in to try and get them. And the helicopter was picking them up and taking them to the LST, our helicopter, our mine spotter. And that was attacked by MiGs. Still flyable, it was damaged, but it was still flyable. That really was the only instance that our aircraft or forces were attacked. I mean, other ships were at other times, but not the Theseus, not an aircraft attack. I mean, the cruisers were bombed and shelled and all that sort of thing, where people were killed. In one instance, it was the army that was killed on it. But
did you ever see any MiGs?
No, no. I say we was too far out. They say the MiG pilots in the original ones were not very well trained. They used to make a pass or two passes at anything, and then they used to disappear. They never made a big show of it. But nevertheless, there was a lot of them about.
Apart from the cold that you've talked about, how did you like operating off Korea?
It was no different than operating from anywhere else, really, the previous cruise or the cruise again after it when we was in Malta, albeit that the temperature, of course, was different. We was trained to do catapulting and whatever you was trained to do, and you just done it. It was, in the instance, really, it was only the cold that was really, I found, was the difference.
Was there any difference between operating on East Coast as opposed to West Coast of Korea?
Well, the thing is, when we went on our last patrol, we went over with the Americans, the USS Bataan, to the East Coast. And apparently it was to do with, I think China was flexing its muscles, and a lot of the American carriers went off of Formosa to put a show of strength. So the two carriers, the Theseus and Bataan, actually had the whole lot to cover between the two of them. So they put them together to make the communists, the North Koreans, think that we still had a large force. The Bataan was certainly faster than us because she actually had four props and we didn't. But once they got together on an operating, they knew what the speeds were of each other's speed. I suppose in a way it became a bit more rivalry. As I said, we always tried to beat them on the takeoffs and landings. It was a friendly rivalry. But on that last patrol, the mine spotting helicopter was taken away, and we actually had a helicopter issued to us for a plane guard. And I like to think that Theseus was the first ship in the Navy that ever had that. Prior to that time, he was always chased by a crash boat in case a pilot went in the drink or something like that. But now we actually had a helicopter the same as the Americans. So if a pilot went in, within minutes, the helicopter could be on him. And all the pilots I've spoken to since have all blessed those Americans, the helicopter pilots.
Did you ever have any leave ashore?
In Sasebo, yes, certainly. Certainly. Very limited. The Americans had a big club because it was basically an American base, or mainly an American base. But we had a club there which was sort of Japanese beer type thing. But it was nothing very. So it was, I suppose, a typical wartime naval base, really. There was a small town. Yeah, that was Sasebo. And then when we came back from that, one of the patrols, because we was at sea on Christmas Day, we went into Kure, which was a Commonwealth base. The Australians were based there. In fact, they had a shore establishment there called HMAS Commonwealth, which again was a different... there wasn't hardly any Americans there at all. It was nearly always Commonwealth forces. And from there, because we had a rest period, we'd been continually working. I mean, we had trips out like to Hiroshima and places like that, which was quite interesting.
What did you see at Hiroshima?
Well, there wasn't a lot of it, really, because the atomic bomb had dropped. But no, you saw the places like, which they say was the centre of the explosion. There was one or two buildings, still skeletons of buildings, and they took pride in showing you bits and pieces, you know, sort of shadows on the steps and things like that where people have been sitting. But then we had sort of tours to to a place called, which was the Island of Gods, you know, it's all sort of temples and things like that. A cultural day out it was.
How did you get on with Japanese civilians?
Fine. The only thing that worried you sometimes is on the dockyards, on some of the parts of the dockyard in Sasebo, they had armed Japanese security. Which, when you think we was only something like 5 years after the war, and all of a sudden you saw an armed Japanese, didn't bother you, but it made you sort of stop and think, you know. And of course, one of the things was that the Japanese were operating minesweepers out there. They sort of reformed, for a want of a word, their navy, because so many minesweepers were sunk. They're going through this mining menace. But no, the Japanese people were fine. I mean, the people that you sort of come into were really, for a want of a word, service people. Giving a service, they was either rickshaw or trishaw operators, or they was in a shop selling you something, or they was trying to sell you beer, or they was selling you something. They was in a service industry, really.
How did servicemen behave ashore? Was there any misbehaviour?
Well, there was the usual drunkenness and from going ashore in the canteens, and there was obviously the fights that went on, you know, my ship's better than your ship. It tended to be, if anything, I think it tended to be between possibly the Americans and the British, really. Yes, it was the odd, for a want of a word, a punch-up. I'm not saying there wasn't.
Why should it have been between Americans and British?
Well, you know, the Americans, they used to have a sign on leaving a dockyard saying, through these gates pass the most wonderful troops in the world, or the best fighting troops in the world. I mean, it was like red rag to a bull. I mean, so you didn't really sort of take kindly to it. I suppose in a way it was just rivalry, thinking they always used to think that they was the best, and we obviously knew we was the best.
Were you ever in any fight?
No.
Why was that?
Perhaps I'd aged early. I'd learned to use my head.
Any other memories from Korea?
Not really. No, not really.
Was Theseus a happy ship for?
Marvellous. In fact, the headlines when we came home was the happy ship that couldn't stop fighting. No.
Were you comfortable aboard ship?
Navy ships in those days were never comfortable. There was certainly no heating on the ships at all, and things like that. We just had a mess with about 20 people in a mess, which was two benches either side of a table and a hammock. The only thing being comfortable on board a ship is, I will say, a hammock was the finest bed they ever made. I mean, years later, and they do now, they've gone into bunks and things like that, but a hammock was a marvellous thing.
Why is a hammock so good?
It's shaped to your body. When you slung it up, you shaped to your body, and all you had to do. I mean, in those days, we only ever was issued with one blanket. So if you got into your hammock, you put your blanket over you, or if it was cold, as it was out there, you could put an oilskin or an overcoat on the top. And you was like a little cocoon. It was lovely and warm. So that was comfort. I suppose that was comfort. But you all lived together and shared the duties in the mess.
What happened after Korea?
Well, we came back. We left there. We was relieved by the Glory, HMS Glory, who'd come out. And then we went back, steamed all the way back, of course, back to Falmouth, who was the first place we called in, where customs came aboard. They was very good to us, the customs were. Although the Triumph had been out there initially, they really looked on us as the first carrier that had come back. And up until that point, nobody wanted to know about the Korean War. And it is still known as the Forgotten War. So when there was, it either must have been a bad news day or something. I mean, when we came into Portsmouth, the press swarmed all over us with all these headlines and and what have you. And we left Falmouth, and the following day we came into Portsmouth. And families were allowed aboard, that sort of thing, till about 6 o'clock at night.
So was it the press greeting you at Falmouth or Portsmouth?
They came aboard at Falmouth, some of them came aboard at Falmouth, and then the rest, because we then, after we left Falmouth, we flew off the squadrons. We flew off the squadrons, and then we came up Channel, and the press were there to meet us again with all the families when we arrived back.
What was the next thing you remember in your career, naval career?
I stayed on the ship again for... Well, we had a long leave period. There was summer leave to take when we come back, which was both watches of the ship. Plus, we had some leave due to us, the fact that we was in Korea. I think we got 6 extra days or something like that. And we then went out again, still on the Theseus, same squadrons, 807 and 810. And we went out to the Mediterranean, exercising again with the rest of the fleet. And I stayed again, still on the flight deck. And which, of course, by that time was much warmer, being in the Mediterranean. And I stayed with the ship until just after Christmas that year, 51, Christmas of 51. When I got, along with a lot of others, because we'd all done 2 years by that time on the ship. We joined in January 50, and we actually went off in January 52. When I got a posting to HMS St Vincent, which was a boys' training establishment in Gosport, which consisted mainly, not training the boys, but again, it was machinery. We had to look after all the boilers in all the classrooms, which was a big establishment. It was a seaman boys' training establishment. And, of course, they had motorboats down in the harbour, which we used to man as a stoker, because the boys used to go out sailing to the Isle of Wight, cutter and whaler sailing, and we used to have to go round as a safety boat all the time. And I spent just over 2 years there, again, before I got another posting, because all postings in those days were more or less about a two-year period. When I got another aircraft carrier.
How did it suit you being ashore?
Wonderful. I'd been at sea for 2 years, and the fact that we were ship's company, we used to get leave, the same amount of leave as the boys, and the boys got 21 days three times a year. So it was, if you knew how to work, it used to take your 21 days, then come back, and all the boys went on leave, and as the establishment was empty, you virtually ended up with 42 days, really, because the establishment was empty. And especially in the summer periods, when there was no boilers to look after or no whalers to go round, it was really a light maintenance time.
So how did you feel when you got the posting to the carrier?
To the carrier? Well, I'd had just over 2 years. I enjoyed the Theseus, and I enjoyed... St Vincent. The Albion was a new class of carrier coming along. It had angled deck by that time, so it didn't have to have barriers to stop the aircraft. I mean, if an aircraft didn't catch the arrestor wire, it just went down the angled deck and off again, so you didn't have barriers. The Batman, the DLCO that I told you about, he was done away. We had a mirror sight, all British inventions. And the same as we had a steam catapult, which before on the Theseus, we had hydraulic. So it was a whole new class of ship. Again, I think it was classed as, well, it was a light fleet carrier, but a different, a next generation of carrier coming along. And that, I was never on the flight deck. That consisted of engine room, watch keeping. It was watch keeping all the time. on the Albion. Boiler rooms, engine rooms, outside machinery.
Which job did you prefer?
I didn't really mind. There's different sorts of watch keeping on a ship. When you're at sea, you go into what you call three watches. So you do 4 hours, and then you get 8 hours or 6 hours, whatever it is, off. Or you can do what they call 24 about. So you do every other watch for 12 hours, and then you get 24 off, things like that. So there's different sorts of watch keeping you can do. 24 about was really the best one, because when you come in harbour, you could have like 24 hours leave, providing you was there back for your next watch. But again, on that one, it was a case of exercising round England, and then we went out to the Far East again, but because by that time, the Korean War, the armistice had been signed, because up until the time we're speaking of now, the Korean War hasn't finished. There was only an armistice signed. The war, the actual fighting took place between 51 and 53. Armistice was signed. And I think they're getting together now, but there's only an armistice and not a ceasefire. But we didn't go out to that. We went out as far as Hong Kong, again, showing the flag, exercising, all that sort of thing, crossing the line and up to India, Bombay, wonderful place.
Bombay?
And I say that with my tongue in my cheek. We was with another aircraft carrier then, the Centaur. We was out showing the flag. The Centaur went to Calcutta and we went to Bombay. I think the reason being is President Nehru was on the Prime Minister or whatever as India at that time. And I think the Indian Navy were after buying aircraft carriers because they never, at that time, had brand new. They tend to buy ships off the British or Commonwealth navies. And they was looking for an aircraft carrier. And I've got a feeling we took him out for the day to see about a carrier operating and that type thing. That was the reason we went into Bombay, plus showing the flag a visit. So that's why we was in India.
Why didn't you like Bombay then?
I didn't think a lot of Crawford Market and the betel nuts and juice on the pavements. The only thing I do remember about that is because there wasn't really a lot of places to go. I mean, Crawford Market and places like that are interesting if you're a tourist to see all the spices and stuff and everything that they've got there. But I went to the cinema there, and the thing that I remember is it had marble floors. And it was wonderful to take your shoes off, to watch the film, take your shoes off, and just put your feet on the cold floor to cool off. I can even remember the name of the film, which was Mr. Roberts.
When you were ashore in England, were there any facilities laid on for sailors?
Well, there was the Sailors' Home Club, which was in Queen Street in Portsmouth. And, of course, over the period of time, it was a terrific change in the Navy going on from the time when I joined in 49 and Portsmouth 50 to actually when I left the Navy in 57. I mean, a lot of public houses were closing. When I first went there must have been at least 20, 30 public houses there on Queen Street alone. Sailors used to go ashore, have a pint, have a sing-song known as a Sod's Opera. And those songs and traditions carried on. But now what's happened, it's jukeboxes, karaoke, those old traditional parts of the Navy have gone. The pubs have closed down. Now it's a disco. So the Navy changed over a period of time. But the Sailors' Home Clubs has always been there where you could get food, accommodation if you wanted to stay ashore. There was the Sally Ann was another one that had food and accommodation. There were several places like that. There were cinemas like that. There were dance halls. I mean, if you went to the Esplanade in Southsea and places like that.
The Sally Ann?
Yeah, Salvation Army. Fine body of people. I always thought.
Why?
You should never talk about religion and politics, really. But I find